What happens when you take a heaping handful of Edgar Allan Poe, mix it together with a healthy dose of the late, great George A. Romero, and a big old serving of Dario Argento? Add a tablespoon of Paul A. Brooks, a quarter cup of Jason Hulls, a dash of Chris Hudson, sprinkle in a little bit of Dave Jeter, bake the entire thing at 375 degrees in a nonstick Mike Hayes deep dish pan, and then top it all off with a deliciously creamy Gale Francis Murren IV secret sauce. Well, baby, you got a two evil eyes stew going tonight on the season finale of
B-Movie Mania!
B-Movie Mania.
Jet Theory Radio.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania. And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Hey, B-Movie Maniacs, what's going on? Paul Brooks here. This is it, the season finale of B-Movie Mania. It's been a long road, guys. It's been a long road getting from there to here. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Jason Hulls?
It's been a long road.
Mr. Chris Hudson, give me some ice clinkies, please, for the season finale.
These are finale clinkies. They're more special than regular clinkies.
Are they metal?
Right. And Mr. Mike Hayes?
What do you want me to do?
I don't know. Do something. I don't know.
Here, I'll open a beer.
Mike's upset. Mike's upset that this is the finale.
Aren't you guys sad?
I think Mike wishes the first season could last forever.
I do.
I'm not sad at all.
I have a lot of fun talking with you guys. It's a very fun time.
Season 1, episode 832.
Yeah, what if we kept season format, but
that's all season 1.
Well, guys, it is the season finale, and it's a very special episode. We're doing an anthology film, and I think we're going to need a little bit of help with it. And fortunately, some help.
Who could help us?
Well, how about not one, but two special guests tonight on the season finale from a podcast based out of Austin, Texas, called Jet Theory Radio. Mr. David Jeter and Mr. Gale Murren are on the program. Guys, welcome.
Hey, good to be here. How you guys all doing?
Excellent. A little golf clap.
Wait, is Gale with you?
Hi, Gale.
Hi. Hi, Paul. Hi, Jay. Hi, Mike.
What's up?
Hi, Chris.
Six dudes, not in one room. We're doing this across three states, as we mentioned on the teaser episode, if you happen to have caught that.
Three states, eight cities, it's insane.
It's craziness. Even though we're spread across three different states trying to do this podcast, all of us have known each other for a pretty long time, and we're all from the same area, if I have that correct, right? We've known each other for a couple years, two years?
At least 2 years.
Yeah. At least two.
Yeah, just two.
And
6 months?
6 months. Wait, two. Are you saying 2 years two and years. 6 months, or 2 years minus 6 months?
I think 2 years or 6 months.
2 years over the course of 6 months.
Yes. That's what it feels like.
Paul, did you tell these guys this was a math podcast? Because that's what it sounds like right now.
My favorite part about this is that we're doing an in-joke from something that Gale said like 13 years ago, and Gale doesn't remember it.
I never remember anything.
Anyway, real quick, we got some ground rules to go over. We're going to be doing things just a little bit different tonight, since we got six of us. It would just be absolute chaos if we were trying to do this all at the same time. Dave, Gale, you guys did a pretty damn good job explaining the ground rules when you joined me for the teaser episode. Do you just want to maybe refresh our memory real quick on how things are going to go down tonight?
Yes, I believe we're going to be reviewing a fantastic film. As we discuss and split into some teams here, I believe Mr. Gail Murn here.
Me.
Over on your side, Paul.
Correct.
And then I believe, who else was it? It was Chris, right?
Crazy.
Crazy Chris. That's it. There we are.
Team one.
My ice clinkies are going to do all my talking for me.
Mm-hmm. Team two is going to be consisting of myself, Mr. Mike Hayes.
Woo!
And Jay, I forget, do you like going by Jay, Jason? How do you, just so I know how to address you formally in this situation.
Jay.
Keeping it short, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
I just call him Ja, just that it kind of means for all of it, really.
And I also rule, so sometimes Chris shortens Jay to Ja Rule.
Yeah. I can't help it.
And Jay, we're going to also be doing a little bit of a fun game to keep things interesting for everyone involved. Explain to our B-Movie Maniacs what the buzz-in thing is all about.
Okay, so what we're going to do is, all of us have big mouths. So we know that there's no way that half of the room here is going to be able to sit quietly for half of the film while the other half talks about it. So we have this buzzer rule where if you have something to say, you buzz in, you will have 30 seconds to make a comment. And pretty much every person gets one of those that they can use for the film they're not reviewing. I think, for instance, the first half of this film is George Romero's film. Since I am reviewing the second half, if I wanted to say something about the first half, George Romero's part, I would buzz in and make my comment, and then I shut up.
Correct.
That's how it works.
Is my buzzer broken? Is my buzzer broken?
This is comedy gold. This is what people want to listen to. It's very good that we're doing this.
Is it? Is it?
If this is any sampling of what is to come, I myself am ready to sit down at this buffet of B-movie goodness and enjoy.
All right. All right. Very nice. Well, on that note, let's get to it. The buzz-in rule is in effect right now. Mr. Chris Hudson... No, you don't have to do it yet, Chris.
Oh, shit.
This
I'm
is
sorry.
Your section.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you blew your buzz in, though, Chris, during your own section.
Mike, buzz in rules have taken effect.
Way to go,
Thank
Chris.
You. Thank
yeah, so
you.
Pipe down, Mike.
Okay.
I don't hear your buzzing.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, Gail, let's do this thing. Two Evil Eyes. It is an anthology horror film that came out in 1990. And Chris, talk a little bit about the origin, if you will, of this story that we're going to review tonight.
It's from a short story by Edgar Allan Poe. Oh, is Mike trying to buzz in with his middle finger? Not too bad, Mike.
No,
I don't hear
don't
anything.
Pay any attention to him. Don't pay. Just block
so,
him
yeah,
out.
I'm going to block him out. So, the facts in the case of Mr. Valdemar.
And I believe it's a pretty short story. Did anybody, Gail or Chris, did you look into...
I did. I found it online and read it this afternoon, and it took me like 2.5 minutes to read.
Wow. Okay.
Now, maybe closer to 10. I don't know. It wasn't that...
Interesting.
It's not that long.
So I want to say just real quick, I like the intro. Thank you, Jay and Mike. They're flipping us off on the webcam. I don't even know why I'm recognizing your presence right now. All of you are dead to me.
They're visually buzzing us, Paul. They're all visually buzzing us.
Quick takes!
Chris, what did you think of... What's it called? It's got a weird name. The case?
The facts in the case of... Gail, you want to finish me off here?
Mr. Valdemar?
Okay, so my quick take on this?
Yes.
Not impressed. That's my quick take.
Okay. Gail, what's your quick take?
Quick take... This was the worst of the two movies.
You know, that's interesting.
Somehow I went from, instead of saying worse, I said worst.
You preferred the other half of the anthology is what you're trying to say.
I probably preferred the little intro. I would take this as the third best.
We're going to talk about that intro in just a second. My quick take was, I have to disagree
Fuck
with you.
Fuck you, Paul. I'm talking. I'm buzzing in. It's 30 seconds starting
right now.
All right,
we got a buzz in right here from Mike Hayes. Mike Hayes, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Mostly I wanted to interrupt you because I thought that was cool. But also, I what Gail just said, like, fuck that, man. This one was way better than the torture porn fucking garbage that was the second movie. This one was at least a little interesting. The dying while hypnotized level thing was kind of fun. And it just in general had a lot. Oh my God. It was just not a fucking torture porn is all. And that was so much better than fucking... Dear Christ, and I think that's my 30 seconds.
To be fair, to go along with Mike, our segment also didn't have Harvey Keitel, so that's a bonus.
Right. And
also,
and
no Denise Richards. So.
Well, that's a good thing is in your book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that Mike just buzzed in, because I'm going to agree with him completely. I know that I'm much more of a Romero fan than I am an Argento fan, but I have to say that I preferred... the first half of this movie to the second half. Might be nice that we might have some disagreements here.
Oh, there's disagreement.
Gail, give us just a little bit about your favorite part of this movie. We open with this sort of almost homage to Mr. Edgar Allan Poe.
I think it was like weird and awkward.
Really?
Like, what's going on here? I guess we're viewing a home. like when mom goes through and you're viewing an old home and your mom is recording you viewing the home.
I thought it felt like one of those like mid-70s kind of like documentary things, maybe narrated by Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, that's a cool vibe right there. I liked it. I don't know what your guys' problem is.
No, I liked the intro. I thought it was kind of cool.
Okay.
To Edgar Allan Poe, whose stories have inspired this motion picture.
Just a nice little, just a real brief little homage to Mr. Poe. But let's get into the actual story, the facts in the case of Mr. Valdemar. Yes, right off the bat, we're introduced to one of our main characters, Jessica Valdemar. She is on her way to... seemingly some sort of meeting that she's kind of rehearsing for in the back seat, either that or prepping for an audition for a play or something like that.
Is that some sort of an accusation, Mr. Pike?
What'd you say?
Nothing. Nothing.
Oh, I thought you said something.
No.
I'd like to point out that IMDb, in the summary when I was looking at it, calls her a gold digger.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Gold digger, Jessica Valdemar.
Well, yeah, that's definitely part of her character, which we find out pretty right off the bat. But just before we get to that, we have what's maybe my favorite part of the entire anthology. We're treated to a nice little establishing shot of an Arby's. Did you guys catch that? Did you see that Arby's back there?
I feel cheated. Now I have to go back and watch it again.
I missed that, too.
2 minutes and 20 seconds if you want to
2 minutes
get on
and 20
Amazon
seconds.
Prime and check it out. Yeah,
I'm going to watch it while these other jackasses talk about their section of the movie.
So, Gail, once Jessica gets into this meeting, what's going on with this guy that she's meeting with?
Well, essentially, I guess she's there to get the money.
She's getting the money she deserves.
Yeah, she deserves it because she's gold digging.
She's a gold
right.
digger.
She pretty much comes out with that. She pretty much says, listen.
I married a rich old man. I let him use me for pleasure and for show. Now I'm going to let him pay me for my services.
So yeah, we get her husband, Ernest Valdemar, on the phone. And it definitely seems like something is a little bit off. And then when we... cut over to Mr. Valdemar's mansion, basically, we definitely see that things are not quite as they seem. And
well, first of all, I want to say this. Any of you people, any of you guys who are musicians and you've got your metronome, have you ever been hypnotized by it?
I can't say that I have.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I didn't think that was a possibility.
That seems to be the key to this this doctor's hypnosis.
Yeah, this doctor that we're introduced to, his name is
Robert Hoffman.
Dr. Robert Hoffman has this strange metronome thing, and we see that Mr. Valdemar is hooked up to a bunch of medical equipment, but Dr. Hoffman has him under hypnosis, essentially, right?
The guy's almost dead, and he's being hypnotized.
Yeah, not doing so hot.
Repeat these words. I want to do it. I owe it to Jessica.
I want to do it. I owe it to Jessica.
Wake him up.
To the pain? To the realization that he's dying?
At some point pretty soon here, you see sort of a group of like a cleaning squad or like housemaids or something.
Yeah, it's shortly after that.
Yep.
And what the hell was up with their outfits? They were wearing like
overalls, like a race crew, like the guys who come and change the tires out at the racetrack.
If they had aprons printed on their outfits,
yeah,
on their jumpsuits,
like frou-frou French made aprons on top of it. It was weird.
But did you notice the one guy also had a bow tie printed on his?
No, I didn't.
No,
that's awesome.
I didn't see that. Sorry, I missed that.
It was amazing. Like the women had aprons printed on their jumpsuits, and the men must have bow ties.
But basically, so we find out that Jessica and Dr. Hoffman seem to be lovers, which I found interesting because the actor playing Dr. Hoffman, definitely a lot younger than Adrian Barbeau's character.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what seems to be their plot?
Well, I think the first order of business is that their plan, Robert's plan anyway, is to just be a creepy bastard. The way he sneaks yes. around watching Jessica put away the money she got from the bank.
Hey, use it in Act 1, or introduce it in Act 1. Use it by, I guess, like Act 1.5, since this is an anthology. I don't know how that works.
Yes, and then also they're getting him to sign things.
Which, might I add, none of this existed in the original short story.
Really? That's, no. I'm glad that you read the short story because I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, there's no talking over phones, no going to the bank to withdraw lots of money.
Well, I figured they'd probably have to update it a little bit.
Yep.
Can I talk about the weirdness of the way the metronome looks?
Yeah.
Has anyone ever found a metronome look anything like that before?
This thing was like the size of a fucking pyramid.
So far the plan's working pretty good. They seem to be pulling one over on the attorney and Mr. Valdemar himself. He is on his deathbed, but unfortunately something happens while Dr. Hoffman and Mrs. Valdemar are trying to get intimate. Anybody want to chime in on what goes down?
Well, this happens after the lawyer suggested, because it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks for all these out-of-town checks to clear, so Adrienne Barbeau gets the money she deserves. And so she'd better hope that Mr. Valdemar lives, you know, better stay alive, right?
If anything should happen to Ernest, you'll have a hard time collecting, I'm afraid. So do your best to keep him alive, won't you?
I'll do my best.
I'm sure you will.
But guess who croaks?
Whoops.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so this is kind of where things take a turn.
Oh, they do. Oh, like, this is where the movie turns into Weekend at Bernie's, and it's amazing.
After he croaks, they have a problem on their hands here. Chris and Gail, what is the solution?
A freezer in the basement. That's your best solution.
Yep.
So they're going to pretend like he's alive until the money, until the check's clear.
No one needs to know he died here tonight. We wait till the money comes through, then he dies a few days later.
Somebody else has to sign for the cremation. So he has to fool whoever that is, so that's why they've got to preserve him.
Which this brings me, though, to a point I wanted to talk about tonight. Kind of the biggest point of discussion in my mind is,
I'd like to buzz in right now.
All right, Jay, 30 seconds.
Jason Halls has a 30-second buzz in. Jay, go ahead.
I thought you guys would find it interesting that Romero actually wanted to do Mask of the Red Death, and it was going to be an AIDS parable set in a futuristic tower, like in the far future. And Argento didn't really want to go that way, and it wasn't the feel he was going for with the movie. Corman was also gearing up to make a version of Mask of the Red Death, so Dario actually used his producer status to force Romero to change, and this was the one that just kind of happened, this story.
Wow.
This wasn't...
Yeah, I can see that.
Wow. Well, that is a very interesting little piece of insight there, Jay. Thank you much for that.
It totally feels like that, too.
What if Pike calls? Wants to talk to him?
No phone calls. Doctor's orders.
Do doctors have that kind of power? I don't know what kind of... I mean, I've never known a doctor... I mean, this was a long time ago, so maybe they had that kind of power then, and it's gone now? I don't understand.
Not being able to speak isn't a qualifier for a doctor to say anything. I mean, unless you had mouth surgery, maybe.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of weird. Like, you know, it makes me think that this doctor is one of the worst criminals in the world.
He's kind of an asshole. There's no doubt about that.
Definitely.
Yeah, so they get this corpse into this freezer. The doctor is into this weird sort of hypnosis sleep, and he likes to sleep under hypnosis. And so the night that Mr. Valdemar dies, he puts himself under this self-hypnosis. And Gail, this is kind of where things start to get a little bit strange. You recall what happens here?
So I guess she hears things and goes to investigate and tries to wake him up. And he cannot wake up. So I guess his version of hypnosis, or whatever it is, if he puts himself under hypnosis, he's the only one who can wake himself up.
Correct.
And that's... I haven't heard of this in a kind of hypnosis before. I don't know. Maybe that's something I should have looked up.
It's like masturbation.
How's that?
Self-hypnosis. You're putting yourself under. You can wake yourself. You can't wake yourself up.
No one else can do it for you.
No one else can do it for you.
Robert! Robert! Wake up! Robert!
So yeah, Jessica starts hearing some strange sounds coming from what seems like the freezer, and she's pretty freaked out, but she manages to make it through the night. Robert wakes up. She's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, that was not cool.
Wait, is this before or after the sponge mop?
The sponge bob?
The sponge mop.
The sponge mop?
Yeah, she hears Ernest. She just hears, oh,
yeah.
Jessica! And she's going down the stairs. This is a pretty narrow kind of spiral staircase. Then all of a sudden, the sponge mop falls down the stairs. Like, what?
I forgot about the sponge mop.
Where the fuck did the sponge mop come from?
They seem pretty high society for a sponge mop.
Yeah, I mean, they just keep them on the stairs, I guess. You think they'd have a proper place for the sponge mop?
One would think. At any rate, the night passes. I assume the sponge mop just gets left at the bottom of the stairs unretrieved for a while.
You never see the sponge mop again. I can only assume it died down there.
Please, let me, if I could take my 30 seconds, I would enjoy it right now.
Oh, Mr. David Jetter, 30 seconds, it's go time.
Okay,
Dave, can you just finish the plot in 30 seconds?
Oh, I can finish it much faster.
The answer is yes, he can.
Essentially, it boils down to Bruce Campbell and Luke Wilson's love child meets up with Sigourney Weaver's stunt double in order to become like a hooker with a heart of gold, who actually does have a heart at the end, but it's unfortunately splattered all over a chandelier. I don't know, because when she died later on, where'd the blood come? There was no exit wound. There was a gunshot. There was like gallons of blood on a chandelier, and then nothing. Because, the fucking Ernest guy comes back from the dead and keeps screaming, Jessica, Jessica, Jessica. It's very easy to remember who her character name is. Very easy. And that's just ridiculous. Well, you had that done in the first 5 minutes. I got annoyed by any time after that.
So much anger.
But I think that pretty much sums it up.
You try sitting here and shutting up while listening to all this blabbering going on.
So, guys, let's go ahead and pick up where we left off there. Robert goes down to investigate, and to his surprise, Mr. Valdemar is actually somehow communicating with him.
Jessica! Jessica!
He is dead as shit, but you can hear him talking. It's pretty spot on, Chris.
Practiced all day for that.
I have been sleeping, and now I am dead.
God.
He's kind of like trapped in between the living and the dead. Do I have that right?
Yeah, yeah. And putting to rest that age-old question of, can you hypnotize the dead?
Apparently we have our answer, because he is dead and he is still hypnotized. But he starts talking about something called the Others.
The Others, yeah.
Oh, so this ties into Lost. Oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cool twist ending, though, if you think about it.
Valdemar is telling Robert that that he's got to wake him up so that he can free him from the hypnotic state that he's in. But Jessica freaks out and just shoots him in the damn face.
Shoots him in the head. twice.
Wake me before...
Yeah, they're not very good at this. You can't really shoot somebody in the head and expect to get away with murder.
Yeah, and their solution now is to go bury him.
Right.
In the middle of a thunderstorm, no less.
Yeah.
Which really made me miss Midwestern thunderstorms. Gail, I don't know if you get thunderstorms in Austin, but we don't get shit out here in L.A.
Oh, we get thunderstorms here. They're worse than what happened in Illinois.
While Robert's out in the thunderstorm, I mean, it's not even really raining. It's just kind of thundering, and Ernest comes up. He's all, you know, because you can't have a George Romero segment without some sort of zombie. And he's talking right. about all these others. He's talking about Lost.
They don't want me to go into the ground.
What was your two's opinion on who are the others actually?
To me, it seemed like they were a bunch of guys dressed in It's Always in Sunny in Philadelphia Green Man costumes.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah. I thought that it was Edgar Allan Poe coming back and trying to destroy the movie.
Oh, if you only could have.
It could be. I do want to say, though, I thought that the special effects were pretty good, which was really no surprise.
Well,
because,
yeah, I think Tom Savini did them, right?
Yeah, you know, if Romero's involved, Savini's going to be on board, and he was doing
Sex Machine!
Corpse... / zombie effects for this, and I thought it was actually pretty creepy.
Good.
Yeah,
they were good. Yeah.
So yeah, we basically get to our climax here, and Mr. Voldemort is up walking around, possessed by these others, right? And
I actually thought this was pretty cool. This is when I started to get into the short.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, cool. This is kind of neat. I like this. I like where it's going.
Long story short, tracks down Jessica. Shoots her in the goddamn face.
I asked you to help me. You should have helped me. Now, it's too late.
Tit for tat, if you will.
But did he? Did he really? Because was there a bullet hole?
No, just blood leaking onto the floor. That's all I
saw.
Well, okay, maybe not in the face, but I watched it again last night. If you look at where he has the gun angled, it's basically like a temple shot.
I think that was poorly done.
Well, why don't you take it up with Mr. Tom Savini? I'm sure he's on Twitter, Gail.
I will. Okay. I will email him directly after this.
Robert, being the shithead that he is, finally goes over to that safe, takes all the money off of it, and just basically bolts. He's like, I'm not dealing with this shit.
Oh, he does deal with it, though. He releases old man Valdemar from his hypnosis, letting him finally rest in peace.
Yes, that's an important point right there. So,
but not before Voldemort says,
they're with you now!
They're with you!
So now we have the others are not just stuck on the island anymore. Now they're out in the world roaming around.
Are they in the metronome?
Is that your theory, Gail?
Do they possess the metronome? Is that why then Mr. Hoffman gets it? Gets it in the chest? Or is it like a poltergeist ghost situation?
I thought it was a poltergeist ghost situation.
Poltergeist ghost situation?
Okay. Yeah, that was my take. You got the Green Man, you know, Charlie Day thing going on, and he picks up the metronome and slams it into Robert's chest.
And there's some behind-the-scenes footage of that in this documentary about George Romero called Document of the Dead, and they show the making of how they do that chest impaling thing, which I thought was pretty sweet.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, I liked that.
The last thing I want to point out before we wrap it up here is we're treated to, you know, all this shit goes down and some detectives eventually show up at the mansion. Jay, I gotta say I'm pretty surprised that you didn't want to chime in for this part, because it's the detective from Night of the Creeps, Thrill Me. He's there to sort of figure out what's going on, and then he eventually shows up at Robert's place, and Robert is... Well, Gail, Robert's not looking too good.
No.
Yeah, he's got a metronome through his chest.
Yeah, Thrill Me, the detective Thrill Me, is pretty freaked out. by the sight of Robert as a corpse with the metronome in his chest, lunging towards him. And Chris, what's the last shot that we're treated to?
Oh, right. Yeah. Blood splatter on money, showing the symbolizing the evils of capitalism. Right.
Right.
Or
right,
exactly. Or is it the Illuminati? Because it's a pyramid. I wanted to bring up the pyramid of the metronome, and then they focus on the pyramid.
Gail's full of theories over here. I like it.
What does it all mean?
So, guys, why don't we let's take a little break right now from the buzzin' rules. We got free reign going right now, and we'll fork it over to our cohorts on the other side, guys.
And all right, I'm going to go make another drink.
Anyway,
I'm going to sit here and drink my Heineken, Mike.
Hey, 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 let's fix it. Instant buzzin' rules starting now. Shut the fuck up.
You know, I had in my notes the thrill me thing in bold.
Watch it.
So in between the end of the first one and the start of the second one, we get a quick, like, 2-second title card shot. I even forget what's behind it because it was just pointless, much like how the beginning of the movie I thought started. Now, this is supposed to be, from my understanding, just a smorgasbord of a bunch of different Poe stories all thrown into one.
Yeah, there was a bunch of, yeah.
Being a big comic book fan, I like to go into comic book movies without having to really know the story it's drawing from. And so I really took it with this. I was like, I'm not going to read Poe. I'm not going to know what the source is. What do they do with the material? And what they gave was a pretty decent and pretty cohesive story overall. Well, without a doubt, it had the better acting half on it. You had Mr. Pre-Reservoir Dogs, Harvey Keitel, leading it all the way, where pretty much you see his becoming infatuated with this black cat that just randomly shows up at him and what you assume is his wife or his girlfriend's place, but really the age difference is so distinct. I want somebody to prove to me that they are not just like father daughter or she's a teenager, because I'm just going with the idea that he's a pedophile in this.
Well, they weren't married, you know, though. I mean, that was made obvious a lot of times.
That was actually, that stood out to me. You know, it's fine if, you know, you want to have the young or a couple with a big age difference, but I thought in this movie that was kind of distracting, and I actually looked it up. He was 51 when they shot the movie, and she was 32.
She was 32?
She did not look 30. She looked like she was the high school age, like her students.
Well, she's teaching high school students,
but she looked
or
the same age.
That age, and her main students were about 18 years old, because I looked up their ages too.
And so, wait, she made out with that fucking high school kid?
Yeah, yep.
Oh, jeez.
See, but, okay, wait. Let me rewind for a second here. So, yes, this is like a total love story to Edgar Allan Poe, right, from Dario Argento. Just for anybody who's a big Poe fan out there, it references The Pit and the Pendulum, The Fall of the House of Usher, Bernice, Annabelle Lee, and the narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym, in addition, of course, to The Black Cat, which they take and expand and pull from all these other stories. And Dave, I think you're right. I think overall it was cohesive, but there was a lot that just kind of fell flat for me.
I have to agree. Like there were certain points like that took me out of it, which I guess is, you know, the age difference with the actors really took me out. The motivation for Harvey Keitel after a while just never really... Like,
oh, that never panned out.
Yeah.
He was just a drunk asshole the whole time.
After he started drinking. Then every scene, if he was drinking or not, he was a drunk asshole.
Which, by the way, the story. Did you guys read the story, by the way?
I've read The Black Cat in the past, but not for...
Okay. I reread it today, and it's pretty close, actually. Like, he starts as an animal lover, and just really kind of... Because he becomes a drunk, he starts getting cruel and just remains cruel and gets worse and worse until he's like mutilating the animals that he loved. It's sick. It's crazy. Harvey's not real sympathetic through the whole thing.
What happened? I heard her screaming.
Well, I accidentally caught her tail in the door. She's all right.
He was his only sympathy. The only thing he seemed to even like be nice to was like the dead bodies he was photographing in his little beret.
And that was a crime against fashion.
And if I could just say, the first time the hint of anything like, you know, boobs related, it was just dead boobs on the screen.
Oh my God.
That's the first time you encounter anything dead or any like kind of like started on nudity that. At all.
Didn't it start with boobs?
Yeah, that was an understatement, dead boobs. That's like woman bisected by a guillotine.
Yeah, that was the Pit and the Pendulum reference in the movie.
Right, right.
Which, by the way, like the dead body and all the that looked good itself. Like you could tell it looked mm-hmm. more like a, you know, somebody put some work into that body for that scene.
That's Tom Savini, who mm-hmm. did all the special effect and makeup gore. And he was actually in this episode. He did it for both movies, mm-hmm. or both stories. And he was actually in the Black Cat episode playing that serial killer who was laying by the grave. He was like sleeping by the grave when they arrested that one. The guy who
pulled all the teeth out of the woman.
Yeah, the one who pulled the teeth. That was him. That's the guy. He looks like Edgar Allan Poe as well. Like, mm-hmm. I thought that. I was like, wait a minute. That looks like Edgar Allan Poe. So he like they dressed him up to look like Poe. And then, you know, he played a serial killer in it.
And one more like little fun point before, you know, we kind of dive into some plot stuff here. I liked when I was looking up there, you know, because I was curious about the ages. So I'm looking them up on IMDb and stuff. Madeline Potter, who plays Annabelle, the lead actress and Harvey Keitel's wife. She
wife.
Still has, or I'm sorry, girlfriend.
She's not my wife.
Girlfriend
she's not
right, my right. years. Never married.
Yes, never married. She uses her photo from the crazy ritual scene in this movie as her IMDb photo still all these years later. So I just thought that was cool. Like out of any photo she could pick, she picked like this insane looking picture.
Yeah. So looking at the plot there, okay, when he starts to unravel and he's drinking more and he's starting to go off the deep end, he has, through the magics of Hollywood and how they look at alcohol, has this like hallucination. And I don't know. Oh, have you guys ever hallucinated on alcohol? I personally haven't, but.
I have not.
Okay.
No. I mean, I guess no. I kind of hallucinated I was cooler than I am or something. I don't know. But about other than that, you're talking about the Ren Faire, right?
Yeah. Ren Faire where all the guys have black makeup smeared on them to look like dirt, and all the women, they did nothing besides like, and you could distinctly see where they just slapped some wigs on some people and just said, hey, come on through.
Well, some of the women did have like blue like mascara and stuff on too, which was a little odd, I thought. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's supposed to show that they're witches or something. I don't know.
I think they pretty much just took extras from like Highlander that was like shooting across the way and said, hey, come on over. We need just some Ren Faire type stuff in this one.
Okay, was that Paul's buzzing? Was that it? All right, that's good. All right, let's keep going.
I want to make this clear distinction. Never in the real world did they indicate that he actually killed the cat until the second cat came around in the bar scene.
Yeah, but it's pretty obvious, I think, right?
Yeah, and he, I think it's obvious. Like, the idea here is that his wife, or
he's
I'm
not
sorry,
his wife.
Keep saying wife.
He didn't get married. They're not married, his girlfriend.
Known her for 4 years, never married.
Known her for four whole years.
She brings this cat home that she finds. He grows to hate it until he ends up strangling it. He has it in front of some paintings. And he's taking photos of the cat dying
and
in front of the paintings.
He's a massive boner. Like, his dick is giantly hard right then.
And don't you think he spirals pretty fast? I mean, he kills the cat. He becomes a drunk. I mean, he smacks Annabelle, too. Like, he chases her down. He's smacking her around. That's all before the hallucination of the Ren Faire craziness.
It's a fucking cat. Meow! Meow! A cat!
You killed her.
And I didn't kill her!
Yes, you did. You killed
her. I didn't!
Yes, you did!
He went to a bar that had a bartender, and it stood out pretty well there. The Ankh, the symbol of life necklace that she had, and the way she was uber creepy.
Did anybody else think, like, Twin Peaks for that scene?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was just so weird, the way, like, instilted the way they were talking to each other.
My girlfriend had a cat that looked just like that one.
Maybe it's hers. Like I said, she just wandered in.
Oh, hers is dead.
Which I thought was, that was cool. I mean, I'm fine with that. Paul, was that your buzzing? Yeah?
Yeah, all right, so Paul's double done? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but so he goes to that bar and he's drinking obviously at the bar because that's what you do at a bar. Mm-hmm. And then so like the bartender's talking to him about this stuff and about this cat. He wants to buy it from her to make it up with his wife and stuff. No, no one's going to
because the wife's thinking
no,
about
it's not his wife.
The
it's
wife,
his girlfriend.
The girlfriend. Yeah. You said the wife.
I was waiting for the bit. The bit was you were going to interrupt me. I thought we were on the same page for that.
Sorry. The wife
No, the girlfriend.
No, yeah, okay. So I was giving you the chance.
Well, that's what I... That's...
She's getting ready to leave him. She wants out. She's done teaching violin to Julie Benz, which, by the way, that was Julie Benz, the young girl.
Yes, I noticed that.
Who was that?
Now we have a buzz in?
That would be one Paul Brooks.
That'd be one Paul Brooks. Right. Okay, let me get my little timer set up here.
I got it.
You got it?
Go.
All right.
Well, I wasn't quite sure if anybody was going to mention Julie Benz, so I'm happy that you guys did. Julie Benz, of course, played Darla on Buffy and Angel. She was on Dexter. She's been in tons of movies and TV shows. Working actress for a long, long time now. And I actually had the opportunity last year to interview her. We sat down for probably 45 minutes, and I got to chat with her.
All right, thanks
really cool.
a lot, Paul. That was a great buzz-in. All right, let's continue on.
And no. I have a little bit of a clip that I'd like to play from the interview that I conducted with her, where she talks a little bit about Two Evil Eyes.
Okay, all right, that's fine.
So here's this little snippet of an interview that I conducted with Julie Benz. Check this out.
My very first job, I was 16 years old. It was a movie they were filming in Pittsburgh called Two Evil Eyes. It was Dario Argento, who's a very famous Italian horror film director, and George Romero, who's also a very famous horror film director. They teamed up to shoot two Edgar Allan Poe stories and put them together as one movie. And so I was in Dario Argento's film, and I was 16, and I went in to be an extra, actually. I went in to just have them take a look at me to be, like, this extra. And Dario saw me sitting in the hallway with my mom, and he didn't speak much English at the time, and he's like, you, come here. And I was like, oh, okay. So I followed him. My mother followed behind, and he took us into this room, and he said, now walk. So I walked across the room, and he goes, walk back. And I walked back across the room, and he looked at me, and he goes, do you want to be in my movie? And I said, yeah. And he goes, no. Do you want to be in my movie? And I was like, yes, I want to be in your movie. He said, good. You will play Betty. So I thought I was playing an extra named Betty. So by the time we got home, they had called my mom, and she negotiated my deal. And I had 5 lines with Harvey Keitel and a bunch of scenes. And he was a bit intimidating on set. Same with Dario. He didn't speak any English, and he was always screaming in Italian. But that was my very first job, and I was so enamored with the whole thing. And I thought, this is what I want
to
do.
So there you go. I got to chat with her a little bit, and cool to get a little bit of her backstory of how she got involved with the film.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool when they talk, you know, actors and actresses talk about their old stuff.
Right. That was her very first film.
Yeah, that's cool.
I wonder if that had any sort of help in her getting more stuff. She was going to play an extra, obviously, so like the fact that, you know.
It's what she played in, it's what she played in Dexter and Defiance, I think.
An extra?
An extra.
All right, Jenner, can you get us back on fucking track, please?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for that, Paul. The one thing I will say is if she was 16 at the time of filming, that sort of made sense that she would play a high schooler then. Like, I could see that then. But anybody else there, like the guy.
Malibu Ken?
Yes, Malibu Ken. when Malibu Ken popped up and then started making out with teacher, which I thought was just making out with a fellow high school student just because she looked so young, Doctor Who audible Madeline Potter, mm-hmm. that scene wasn't earned. It just was like, we need to extend the story a bit and give her a little bit of a character arc.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she was obviously distraught over the whole situation. Mm-hmm. So I think she was acting out in a way, you know, outside of the relationship bounds, because she sees someone who looks up to her and kind of puts her on a pedestal as a teacher. So she obviously, you know, blah, 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 kind of goes down some sort of a psychological, you know.
But if I could just say, her big, like, tipping point to going downhill was seeing the book. The book, which, by the way, I forget how long the cat was missing at this point, but I think it was honestly 2 or 3 weeks. And he somehow was able to take pictures of this cat and turn around and put it into a book and she not know a thing about it at all.
And just getting the entire thing out and in stores that fast. But that's moving at the speed of plot. So
yeah.
It had to happen.
So basically we've talked about how she's dead though, right? He's killed her.
Yeah.
And so he decides to, classic, you know, Edgar Allan Poe style, hide her somewhere.
Yep.
Her body.
He decides to wall her up in the basement.
Upstairs.
Upstairs.
Is it upstairs?
You're confused with the actual book. The actual story is in the basement.
The actual story is the basement. Sorry.
I was going to say, like, you see him, like, starting to, like, do some construction stuff, but you don't quite realize what was going on. It took me a minute to realize, oh, wait, he built a wall there, I guess. Because you just see him work with a little bit of plaster, and in this, like, little short montage, he's working with plaster, and then he's, like, putting a bookshelf up, and that's it.
Okay, so that's a kind of an interesting take, because you were unfamiliar with the story then, right? Like, I saw that happen, and I'm like, oh, he's going to wall her in, because at some point, I'm having flashbacks of whatever, high school, when I read the story or something like that. Mm-hmm. So was that a good, how did you feel about that, like, I don't know, that reveal or something?
Like, I could tell the reveal was coming as soon as he heard the scratching upstairs. I was like, it's something to do with the bookcase. And then, like, it surprised me at first that it was just the cat popping out, in all honesty, because I thought it would like the dead body reanimated in some way.
Okay, let me ask you this. Now, the cat evidently is supposed to have in its white fur on its chest the shape of, like, a gallows, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they show the symbol on the cat at one point earlier in the movie, and I swear if it's there, if you look at the books and the way they're arranged on the bookshelf, is there, the same shape, in the pattern of the books on the bookshelf?
I didn't notice that.
Let me review my notes around that time, but I don't remember noticing that.
It was fast. I don't know if I made that up in my head or if that was really there, but I thought I saw it. So
I did have the note that after killing the cat, Harvey Keitel wears nothing but blue the rest of the movie to reflect his soul.
I did notice he's just wearing that, like, denim shirt the whole time after that.
Mm-hmm. I just couldn't get over the beret.
God, the fucking beret.
Oh, my goodness.
Thankfully, he only wore that when he was working as a photographer.
A crime scene photographer.
Are you saying you don't like it?
No, I'm not saying that at all. No, the crime photos are terrific. They're startling. I'm just saying contrast. Contrast, that's all I'm saying.
All right, so back to this wall. They're scratching at the wall, and he's like, what the fuck's this about? And he goes up there, and, like, he gets a bit of a surprise. The cat.
Oh,
the
that's
cat
right. Yeah.
Gets shoved. Someone shoves a cat through a hole in a wall, like, aggressively. And the cat leaps at him from the hole in the wall, as it should do. Mm-hmm. And he just apparently picks up a saw and just throw it like samurai swords the cat. With
because
the saw.
That's how a saw works.
Yes, yes. It's not a back and forth motion at all. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so he bags it up and he goes to throw it away, kind of a thing. And at that point, the claws are still extended, and that's what scratches him. When he's trying to throw up the dumpster, he gets scratched.
Yeah, when the priest says, hey, how's it going? Oh, killed a large rat.
My name's Father Hammer. I'm your neighbor.
Hello.
It's leaking.
Yeah, it's blood.
Oh.
It's a rat. A big rat.
Yeah, a large rat. And that priest, that really doesn't serve any point. You do see the priest, like, the priest comes and talks to him, and then he says it's a rat, and the priest is just like, I hate rats, and leaves, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should have been, like, one of the kids, right? Because that kid gets real suspicious real quick when he gets...
Malibu Ken, that's what my wife calls him.
Yeah. It should have been him, like, oh, then he could have got pushed, you know, gone away. Same dialogue, but gone.
You know, I did like how he called out Harvey Keitel when she went missing, and, you know, he's just, like, in the street yelling about how Harvey Keitel must have done something to her.
Yeah, Annabelle went on tour, only she didn't take her violin and she never got there.
Well, will she be away long?
2 or 3 months. If they want her longer, who knows?
Don't listen to this guy, he's a damn liar.
My internal thought was, dude, fuck, if you know he's a murderer, don't fucking call him out into his face. You gotta fucking sneak around with that. He's gonna get you.
That's what that teenage mind, like, all his hormones and all his thoughts was just going right to his dick instead of his head.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, we did skip one important point. We skipped our half of the movie's Weekend at Bernie moment. He was trying to convince his neighbors that Annabelle wasn't dead. And so he took a photo of her face.
Yeah.
And made this dummy in the car and with fishing wire, like, rigged it up so when they drove past, he would like pull the fishing wire and it looked like she was waving.
Yeah.
Like,
the way that shot was with the fishing line reminded me instantly of Home Alone. And I think Home Alone did a scene just like that as an homage to this movie. That's how
you think so?
It.
That was the reference?
That's how I'm
He's murdered the wife. She's locked in the wall. The cat jumps out. He patches up the wall. And then he's trying to convince people that him and his wife his girlfriend.
They knew each other for 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Not married.
They try to do that. And then, you know, the cops show up because the kid got suspicious because he kept telling people that, like, she was out on tour. And like both movies, I noticed this in both movies, people fucking keep coming to the door when they're carrying dead bodies around. Mm-hmm. Both movies had that.
And they will always knock repeatedly like it's an emergency. They will not stop. It could be like 5 minutes. Yeah. They're knocking. Like that whole scene where he's covering up the body and like he's showering and doing all that stuff.
Like, that guy was convinced that Harvey Keitel was home.
Yeah, yeah, like, what the shit? Is no one ever not home?
Yeah, I think it was because of the loud music, but I thought that music was just part of the soundtrack.
I didn't get the impression.
Another quick point for all the Poe fans out there. I thought that was Poe, a picture of him hanging in the stairwell. It turns out it's actually Charles Baudelaire, who was a French poet who translated a lot of Poe's work. It's like he's responsible for Poe's status in American literature, I guess, or partly. So, yeah, thought it was Poe, wasn't Poe. Anyway, cops show up. What happens?
Cops show up. They go nosing around the house. One guy especially to the point where you think he's going to discover all the gory details and, like, the murder weapons and all that stuff. I got the impression they were scoping for information as if they knew something was going on.
What happened to your wife? She's not my wife.
Oh, right, right. What was her name? Annabelle.
What do you mean was? It's still her name.
Yeah, well, that whole thing was just odd. Like, they took a book of his, one of his books with the dead cat and the dead people, and then he goes back. The cops go back because they want him to sign it.
And the whole time, so, I'm thinking, like, they're going to get, like, a hand, like, a signature.
Buzz.
Kind of I heard a buzz.
Oh.
Buzz.
Oh.
I'd like to point out that Mr. John...
Wait, hold on. Mike, you got the timer ready? Because this guy will go over his limit.
Well, we already did Paul, so all right, go.
Mr. John Amos, best actor in both movies? Nah, not really. But just wanted to point out, little fun fact, he did this. He stopped to do this movie in between doing Coming to America... and Die Hard 2.
Wow.
Coming to America, Two Evil Eyes, Die Hard 2. There's your John Amos.
Jeez.
That was a perfect 30 seconds. Thank you.
Dario probably just convinced him that he was working on Die Hard, like a different part of Die Hard 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a scene.
It saved on budget with wearing the same outfit in both.
But yeah, so I did think it was a little weird that they left and then came back. I don't know if that was supposed to be for tension.
Yeah, he makes a joke. They leave and he says, he's like, what is it? Oh, you didn't find what you thought you'd find in between these solid walls or something?
Gentlemen, I'm glad your suspicions have been allayed. I wish you a long and happy life. And what did you expect to find between these solidly put together walls?
The cops want an autograph in the book and then they hear the noise.
Hey, Rod, I like what you said before about me almost co-authoring the book with you. Would you sign it like that? Where's that coming from?
They go up there to the wall where all the books are, start tearing stuff down with like some sort of pickaxe or something. And, well, what do we see?
You see the girlfriend dead, half eaten, with a bunch of skinless kind of cats, which is weird because they apparently were supposed to be kittens, but they were bigger. And they were like, what, four or five of them all like feasting on her body.
Yeah, they're like demon cats.
Yeah,
yeah,
demon
cats. They're all like eating her body and
the money shot.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And then Keitel uses the pickaxe and kills both of the cops.
They went down way too easy. One took a hit to the shoulder, and that was it.
And he's handcuffed to the main detective. Mm-hmm. So he's lugging this guy around, and the neighbors once again start banging on the door like mad, going crazy.
Harvey Keitel drags the body, and he decides for whatever reason that it's going to be a good idea to jump out a window, a second story window, to escape the neighbors that are knocking on the front door.
Yeah, with a 350-pound guy attached to him.
Yeah, because that's going to be entirely possible. Don't, like, you know, take the pickaxe or anything like that to the handcuffs. No, let's just toss it and drag it with you down the street in broad daylight. In broad daylight, mind you. Yeah. That was going to be a Weekend at Bernie's, like, flea attempt. So he throws a rope on a tree that's right outside the window in hopes of being able to put the rope around him and then jump and sort of lower himself out a little bit. It gets caught up, he slips, and the rope ends up around his neck. And because he was dragging the cop's body, the cop was the weight that pulled him down. So that's where the hanging scene that was seen in the white fur of the cat's chest came true.
That's it. Oh, Chris, we have Chris Hudson buzzing in at the buzzer of this movie.
Oh,
what's
yeah
up?
I just wanted to say that I watched this part of the movie while working, so I didn't pay full attention to it, but I just want to say, kind of go along with some of the things you guys said, but I just want to get across how weird this movie is. Every time I looked up at the screen, I just said, what the fuck is going on? That's my reaction to this entire movie. What the fuck?
There's a lot of animal cruelty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's not. There's not animal cruelty, because the first thing right after it ends flashes up, no animals were harmed in the making of this movie.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
But do you really believe that?
Yeah, I believe the Italian film industry had that really well regulated in the 80s, yeah.
Well, did they shoot this in the U.S., in certain scenes in the U.S., and certain scenes overseas?
No, it was all done in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. This is actually Dario's first movie in the United States, and his first movie with big Hollywood stars, like Harvey Keitel. But after the hanging, it just ends. It abruptly ends.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's weird, because, like, honestly, with the way how they had the little short synopsis beforehand, and they had the introduction at the very beginning of the movie, you thought there'd be, like, something, like, Poe's,
a
silhouette of Poe, or, like, you know, something at the end.
No, they probably had something, and then they said, no, fuck it, we gotta make sure people know we didn't hurt a cat real quick, because because they did harm a
cat. Even though the cat lives at the end.
Yeah, well, yeah, it does live, but when they shoved that cat through that fucking, like, hole. Could just tell. It was, oh, man. Anyway, can we get the other people back in, because fuck.
Yeah, yeah, I just want to say, I want to give credit where credit is due here. The Wikipedia has the cat credited as Cinzenthina, the cat.
Mm.
It's like Cinzenthia the cat is who played the cat.
Wait, did the cat die in the making of this movie?
No, there were no animals harmed.
just checking.
Rating time!
Let's get into some ratings, and it's kind of whatever you want to do. You can rate your section, you can rate the entire movie. It's up to you, really. So it's between 1 and 100, Evil Eyes, or you can go Hypnotic Clocks, right? Or guys, what do you think from the second half? Let's get one more sort of rating system.
Dead
in there.
Cats. How many dead cats?
No, not dead cats.
I was going to say, how many symbols in the cat fur do you see?
Too long.
Mike doesn't like it because he has to do the graphics for this part.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, if they're too long, it looks like shit. It has nothing to do with what I want to do. It's the same effort, but it looks like shit if they're too long.
Dead cats.
No.
Dead felines?
How about the little fedora?
Oh, berets. Fucking, berets.
Yeah, the beret.
Keitel berets.
Berets.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, there you go. Chris Hudson, kick it off here.
Well, since I didn't really pay that much attention to the black cat section of the film, I'm only going to rate that as a WTF, but the George Romero section, there were parts I liked, there were parts I didn't like. You know, I didn't really like it that much, but I didn't hate it either, so I'm going to do a little section crossover here and rate the strange case, or the facts in the case of Mr. Voldemort. 50 Keitel berets.
All right, straight down the middle. Let's go Keitel over berets. To... let's mix it up a little bit here and go my case.
I am going to rate the whole thing because I did watch both of them. I liked the Ramiro one a good bit more. I just thought there was some fun stuff involved. The others coming for them and that kind of stuff. And I thought it was, wake me so I can die kind of a thing was fun. And then the cat torture porn was bothersome, at best. So, but in general, there's some cool stuff. So I'm going to do 50. I was saying this before Hudson even did it. 50 Keitel berets as well.
Solidarity.
Okay, 250s right down the middle there. Gail Murren.
All right, I'm going to go with a 2.
A 2?
No.
Why? Because it got 2 nominations. We got a Fangoria Chainsaw Award, and then it got a Saturn nomination at the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films for Best Genre Video Release.
Interesting.
Okay, so you're giving it a 2?
Out of whatever.
Out of 100?
100.
Out of 100.
Yeah.
Because it only got 2 nominations. Also...
Because you hated it?
Yes.
What if it had gotten 100 nominations?
Well, then I would be giving it 100.
I would have gotten 100.
Best movie ever.
If it got 101, I would have given it 101.
Let's not argue with him.
I understand that you guys are new here, but that's the lowest rating in B-Movie Mania history.
Yes.
Hey, I love it. It's perfect. It's a good theme.
Wow. All right.
All right. Jason Hulls, what you got for me?
Well, I also actually liked the Romero part better than the Black Cat part. I watched both of them. I think the Romero thing had a little bit more, it was a little more fun. Still kind of boring and a lot. I think both of these should have been a lot shorter, but I know they need feature length runtime. So, I'm going to go 53 Keitel berets.
Okay, there you go. Dave Jeter, the other showrunner.
In looking at it, I distinctly liked one part over the other. The first part, Romero's part, I thought was just very bland, boring, and it wasn't too inventive on his behalf. I expected something a little bit more than something comes back from the dead. So I was going to give that part 53 Keitel berets. The second part, something had a little bit more in it, especially with the cinematography. Like, you had the cat POV shot as it's running around, and it actually led to a good switcheroo with Malibu Ken doll student. So I gave that a 77. So scoring that down the middle, it'd be 64 Keitel berets overall.
Okay, so you're saying that that's the average of both halves
of the two? Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. You know, maybe it's because we just lost George Romero, but he's always been my guy, and I thought that his portion of the film went a lot better. But Jay took the words right out of my mouth. Both filmmakers, or just if someone had made a decision to trim each of these by 15 minutes, you'd have a 90-minute movie, and I think the whole thing would have come together a lot better than it did, because... I don't know, maybe it's just the times that we live in, but I was struggling to hold on to my attention the entire time.
90 minutes also would have fit my lunch break better.
There you go. That being said, I'm going to go 6-0 hypnotic. What did I say?
Hypnotic clocks.
Hypnotic clocks.
It's funny because there were no hypnotic clocks in this movie,
that's
Paul.
That's true. That is an odd.
Well, you know what I mean.
But, you know.
Pyramids.
Okay. Hypnotic.
Pyramids.
Hypnotic pyramids. Fine. Awesome. Hey, we did it. We somehow knocked this thing out. I want to thank Dave and Gail for joining us. Before we wrap this up, hey, you guys got a podcast. Why don't you tell us, tell the B-Movie Maniacs out there, a little bit about what you guys are doing on Jet Theory Radio down there in the ATX.
Basically, on our podcast, we're live from the ATX on Jet Theory Radio. We sit down with people in Austin who are doing something in the city. We've talked with people who are opening restaurants, opening breweries, the whole walk of life. If you're involved with something with Austin,
we have you on the show to sit there, talk about it, and then we geek out about something. Comic book movies, talking about B-movies. We've done that one before. To whatever.
WWE.
WWE. Oh, we've had tremendous battles with that. 90s nostalgia. Just the whole gamut of things. That's pretty much us in a nutshell.
Very cool. And if our listeners want to connect with you, what do they need to do?
Yeah, so you can find us on iTunes as well as anywhere pretty much that you can find a podcast. It's Jet Theory Radio, JETT Theory Radio. We've got an Instagram and Twitter and YouTube, all also at Jet Theory Radio, as well as our website, jettheoryradio.com.
Well, there you go. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for the season finale. Dave, Gail, really appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully the B-movie crew over here can make an appearance on Jet Theory at some point.
Hell yeah.
I don't see why not. Let's just record it now. Let's just keep it going. We go for about a couple hours. Everybody's free right now, right?
I got things to do.
Oh.
Paul, you might want to sign off because we're just going to talk about Doctor Who all day.
Yes.
Oh, boy. I'll see you guys later. Chris, Jay, Mike, honestly, sincerely, it's been an absolute pleasure this season. You know how much fun I have hanging out with you guys, even if it's over the internet.
Especially if it's over the internet.
We got to get together somehow.
Well, guys, there it is. Season one of B-Movie Mania is in the books. But don't count us out yet. We got plenty of cool content heading your way during our quote-unquote off-season. Mike Hayes, why don't you tell them about it?
We've all been talking about just different little tiny projects we wanted to do to create some content, do some cool stuff, and, you know, maybe see, just experiment a little bit. So we're going to have, keep an eye on the feed. We're going to have stuff coming out, hopefully on a regular basis still. Let's try something a little different for a little bit, a few months.
And we'll have all that, plus the soothing sounds of Paul's penis.
We're going to listen to Paul's dick.
So... We don't say this enough. If you enjoy what you're hearing, because seriously, we put a lot of effort, time and effort into this thing. If you enjoy it, rate us on iTunes. Give us a little bit of a review. Give us some love. We'd really appreciate it.
For everyone who has already done that, because we do have some, you know, people have done that. They're very nice and wonderful reviews, yeah. And we really appreciate that you've done that. And
we just want you to know you won't be the only people rating and reviewing us.
I'm trying to say something nice to the people, Chris, that we really appreciate that you've done it, and they're very nice words, and it makes us feel good.
Thanks for listening this year.
And until next time, the buzz-in rule is back in effect. So I just want to say really quick that...
I want to say, wait, what?
My turn, 3 seconds.
No, I'm buzzing in. You said the buzzing rules.
And I just buzzed in.
No, I buzzed in over you.
I want to say about the I want to say Chris about the cat.
What?
I'm buzzing in right now. I want to say about the cat.
No, but Chris, I buzzed in over you, and then Chris buzzed in over me.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out, touch them. They are touching themselves, and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
I just want to have 30 seconds of clinkies.
Mmm.